Mohan asked me to come here. He said, come here with your epidemiology hat, because I did quite a bit of stuff on aquatic epidemiology. And then often people think about epidemiology as statistics and numbers. So here I tried actually to make it quite simple and try to, we have a lot of tables and multivariable, univariable kind of stuff. But I will not bore you with that stuff, just with the key information and the things that we think we know, okay? Here they are, come studio me, okay, thank you. So, but I would like to say something also about, for us, I work for IDH now, that works with many different things, and I'll show you a slide on that. Not only aquaculture, coffee, cocoa, tea, natural stone, natural stone does not get sick. So, stones, minerals, no shoes, no problem. But it's an investment for us to come here for 2 days talking about this. And I want to tell you why. First of all, just briefly, what IDH is, what is the organization that I work with is. It's an organization that convenes, brings together, and co-invest with the private sector. That's the critical rule for us. We have to work with the private sector. We can't spend money, we can't invest our time unless the private sector somewhere is doing the same thing. Okay, so it's funded by the Dutch government, but recently the Danish government is also putting money, and we are talking already with the Swiss government, because they like this idea of a co-investment with the private sector. So realizing what are the sustainability challenges that the private sector wants to address, and how can we help them to solve them. And as I said, we work on some 12, 16 sectors, depending on which stage. Aquaculture is a key sector for us. We have around 8 million euros of investment on this. And again, it has to be matched by an equal amount coming from the private sector. So you end up with around, 16, 20 million euros of a program, generally. Working on pangasius, shrimp, and tilapia. Pangasius is the Vietnamese catfish. And the reason why we are investing into me coming here and spending 2 days and so on is because the shrimp disease is a major challenge for sustainability. We often talk about you have to have environmental sustainability and social sustainability. If you do not make money, you do not invest in sustainability. Very simple. Okay? So, and we have recognized that actually EMS is becoming a key challenge for the sector. So let's be here together and discuss how we can understand better and how can we react to this issue. Okay, the information that I'm presenting is coming from a range of sources, and I want to quote here the first official mission, if you want, that we had in Vietnam was between the 11th and 19th of July, was from the CMC, that is the Crisis Management Center, which is an FAO, OIE kind of organization or initiative, if you want, and was the first time that the CMC got involved in aquatic animal health. So there have been many, the old story, many disease outbreaks and so on. For the first time, this CMC actually said, this is an emergency. We have to react, okay? And we did, it was very short time. I mean, it's really 8 days, of which you have 1-2 days of preparation, another 2 days are in the report. So it's really quite tight. And we developed questionnaires. We did interviews, 17 farmers, because you are moving. You are talking with a lot of people, try to get a lot of information. And we try to use a so-called case control approach. How do you compare a farm that is not affected from a farm that is affected? That's the way of thinking, okay? We also use participatory epidemiology because you are moving from one farm to the other and you are meeting farmer groups and so on. You have to think a little bit, we had to think a little bit more in a more innovative way. So, for example, we had a farmer group and we talked with these farmers, tried to develop a database based on what the people were saying, and then we used that for the analysis, try to get as much information as possible. Then there was, again, FAO-supported analysis of a survey conducted by the Department of Animal Health, that is part of the Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Development of Vietnam. This was questionnaire interviews and is arguably the largest epidemiological study, if you want, ever conducted in the region at least, with the 20,584 farmers being involved, 29, basically all the key provinces. So that was the intention. The government actually took charge and said, let's try to get information on what is happening. And we did descriptive analysis. We did some more kind of statistical analysis, looking at one variable at a time, looking at a more variable, more things, okay? At the same time, how do they relate one to the other and what are the real things that we can find there? But also there is a lot of stuff coming from mixed sources at the regional level, talking with the people and people that tell you, well, you know, I've seen this, I've seen that, and then we try to build it into this kind of more structured, a little bit more structured kind of studies. But I would like to point out that none of this was actually a proper, and I put in inverted commas, epidemiological investigation. This is not a criticism. Huh? It's you work with what you have. Okay, you have an emergency mission, you do what you can with that emergency mission. You don't get given $100,000 to sit and say, let's develop a nice epidemiological study, we do the right training, and so it's an emergency situation, so you go out and you do what you can. Okay, and the same thing that the Department of Animal Health did. They went out and they asked information. They didn't think, well, you know, we should really start planning and train all the interviewers and develop a nicely prepared questionnaire and so on, because it takes you 2 months to do that. It's an emergency, let's go out. This is the questionnaire, let's go. Okay, this comes with problems, of course, but, you know, again, you work with what you have. So what are the characteristics of EMS? You can call it whatever you want, actually, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I call it EMS because 3 letters is shorter than the 5 that there are there. Okay? So we know there is a mass and sudden mortality. So all the farmers that we talked with, and they reported having that, and I'll talk later about the case definition, how do you define EMS, they talked about mortality happening very quickly. So, you know, it was in the range of, 2, 10. All died on one day. This is the sequence, okay? Very difficult to do the so-called epidemiological curves in which you see the mortality increasing and so on. It's all like this, okay? So it's all immediate, it's happening, and it's done, okay? So, of course, there is abnormal hepatopancreas, and there are different reports on what abnormal means to the people that observe this mass mortality. Shrunken is most commonly, white also, but some people talk about swollen hepatopancreas. I was talking with Don yesterday about what is swollen hepatopancreas. I've never seen it. And then Don said, I haven't seen it either. You know, what you see is, but it's that concept. Well, we don't know, you know, so the farmers thinks it's an abnormal hepatopancreas. Maybe actually is mistaken, because everybody talks about Gantui, that is the hepatopancreas, is the disease of the hepatopancreas. So it probably starts looking at things that maybe are not there either. It appears like it's spreading, and I say apparently spreading here, because spread is a very tricky thing. Huh? So let's say that you have, I don't know, white spot disease. Well, most of us are familiar with white spot disease. There is a drop in temperature. Most of the farms that actually have the virus and some other kind of risk factors, they will get sick at the same time. It's not infection from one to the other. You said, oh, it's spreading, it's everywhere. Yeah, but actually the problem is that the virus was everywhere and the drop in temperature triggered the disease in all these farms. Okay? So when you actually see that appearance of spreading, you don't really know if it is really a true spreading or a spreading of a pathogen, for example, or spreading of a practice. Oh, yeah, these guys do it like that. They make money, and then you start people adopting a certain practice. And you look at the use of probiotics. That was spreading. Okay, and then maybe it's related to spreading of other problems, not because the problems are spreading, but because the practice is spreading. And the other interesting thing is the outbreaks tend to be always 4, 5, 1 week apart. And then the reason why we are interested in these kind of things is because if it's infectious, if I get sick and it's an infectious disease, it's going to take, for whatever, depending on the disease, a number of days or hours to infect my friend here, Simon. And then Simon will infect the neighboring, and again and again and again. The time that it takes, when you have always the same time, it means that there is something is moving. Okay? It's not, if it is a practice, for example, you wouldn't see that repetition. Okay? You would see something like, well, it's happening, and it's happening at any point in time. And then a farm gets all the ponds affected, and then some other ponds after 1 day, and other ponds after 1 month. But when you start seeing that 4 or 5 days, 1 week, very, very often. So farms that said, well, I have 26 ponds, and these 4 ponds were affected first, and then the other 22 ponds were affected after 4 or 5 days. Okay? You start thinking, says, well, it looks like if it's something infectious, really. Maybe direct transmission, because the time is actually quite short. So you are thinking about viruses, you know, 2 days. When you're looking actually in ponds for white spot disease, for example, you start seeing transmission after 2-3 days. You start seeing, you say, these are peaks, okay? You say 3 days, 4 days, you start seeing the kind of the waves. Okay, and that tells you a little bit of what you call an infectious period, is an incubation period. Okay, it's not really a true incubation period because it includes things like the time it takes to for the water to go from one farm to the other, or things like this. Okay, but it really makes you think when you see a repeating figure like that. It really makes you think about epidemic waves. We talked about case definition, you know, how do we define the disease? Because you are doing this outbreak investigation first, and then you have the questioners coming in from the Department of Animal Health. We have heard from Don Leitner about the case definition. That's an animal-level case definition. Beautiful, no argument about that. We can discuss, improve it, or whatever. But that's at the animal level. So you see an animal, this animal is affected. But when you go to a farm, how do you define the farm? You don't have the histopathology techniques. We now have some gross signs that we can use for future epidemiological investigations. But when you go out and you have a questionnaire and you don't know what you are looking for, how do you define it? And we're thinking really about the mortality. We have been considering having mass mortality or not. We've been considering having a cutoff point in the number of dead shrimp that you see at the edge of the pond. Different discussion, but if, so far, when we did this analysis, we were looking at the mortality and an abnormal hepatopancreas, okay? We were thinking also about, should we include the time after stocking, the 30 days, the 35 days after stocking? I personally prefer having a more so-called sensitive, a case definition that actually picks up a lot of the positives, a lot of the disease, if you want, and then having something that might exclude a lot of the positives. So risk factors, and again, this is just a summary. I put here a couple of things, and then there were a bunch of stuff that was associated. When you look at one variable at a time, okay, you know, you start seeing all sorts of associations, so all sorts of things that is that variable is associated with disease. So, okay, you know, being in that province associated with disease, okay, but in that province you have more intensive systems. Okay, in that province they use only one kind of feed. In that province they take the seed only from that province. So there are many variables, many things that are related to each other. So here what I'm presenting to you are things that tend to be, most of them, tend to be so-called adjusted for the effect of other variables. So when you put this variable and that variable and this one and this one and this one, you still see something like these effects, okay? Remember, this is not data coming from a truly proper design epidemiological study in which you sit, you design it, calm, you do it, you have enough money to implement it and take the necessary samples on a population that actually makes sense, okay? So we found that the intensive systems, intensive, semi-intensive systems that tend to be, this is most coming from Vietnam, as you have seen before, systems that are not the mixed model with rice and the lower the intensity system and so on, tend to be more affected. Okay, and that was also related to something that Matt Briggs was asking this morning. Yes, you might be able to see that multiple species are not affected, but that might be because it's actually culture in a low intensity system. So there is always that condition, looking at different variables. We found that larger farms had an increased risk. The arrow went up. The larger farms had an increased risk. Okay, and the reason for that is natural, because the more ponds you have, the more likely you are to have one pond that is affected, to have experienced the disease. It's just a matter of exposure, you know. If you have 5,000 ponds, or if you have one pond, you are more likely with the 5,000 ponds to have one affected than if you have only one. Okay, so again, the second line is the other way around the arrow. We found that inland districts, in some of these studies, inland districts and stocking at lower salinity was reducing the risk. That was not consistent in different studies and different. So I'm still wondering, and that's why I put risk factors with a question mark there. I'm still wondering. We didn't have enough information really to actually or good quality information to actually be able to really say, yes, England is more affected, even when you adjust it, less affected, even when you're adjusting it for the effect of other variables. Having a reservoir reduce the risk. Okay, so which is actually goes well. It's again adjusted for different variables. And the other thing we found that actually not all the farmers affected in 2010, because disease actually started in 2010 in Vietnam, at least the reports that I'm aware of, at least experienced the disease in 2011. Therefore, it says clearly that you can, or reasonably clearly, that you can control it. There is a potential to change things that will allow you not to have the disease again. So not to have the recurrence, okay? Pond preparation, people using saponin at a lower risk. Again, take these things with a question mark because the data was not really, you know, collected in the way that I would expect it to be collected, but again, it's a matter of urgency. Longer drying time increased the risk. Don't ask me why, and I'll tell you actually why I think some of these things, actually. Plowing increased the risk. And the use of more lime increased the risk, okay? But think about these things for a second, and I'll tell you a little bit more later about the bias, the problems with this kind of... stocking actually was quite an interesting one. Okay, monodon is more susceptible. That we know that is, you know, you need to just go around a couple of farms and you realize that. We found that consistently, okay? But Vaname is also affected, and we have seen the slides from Don Leitner this morning. Something about stocking later and stocking older seed reducing the risk. Again, question marks. You know, I don't want you to go out and say that's the solution. That's actually what you have to do. Okay, we are here to talk. That's why I'm presenting this to you and not to the farmers, okay? Because we are here to talk and try to understand really what is going on and how can we move forward. The source of seed may play quite a role. And that came out in a number of ways. Huh? For example, the seed from known sources was as opposed to seed coming from middlemen seemed to have lower risk. Things like, you know, again, with this participatory database, you start asking people and you compare and you find basically that most of the people that were getting the seed from one hatchery that they knew were at lower risk than the ones that were getting seed from all sorts of places. If it is a pathogen, if the seed coming with the seed, if it is the seed weaker, if it is, that is a different discussion, okay? But there seems to be something with the seed. There was no association with insecticide use. There was some association when you look at one variable at a time, for example, cypermethrin. There was a lot of discussion about cypermethrin, no? And that was also presented by Don. There was no association with that. There is a statistical association when you look at the whole database, okay? There is a statistical association. And the reason, I think, is because the provinces in which there is more disease, more likely, for whatever reason, because of the farming system or because of just the practices, to use a cypermethrin, okay? When you adjust for confounding for these things, you don't see it, first thing. Second, is only in a very small proportion of the farms that are affected. Therefore, if that is really the cause, you would see it everywhere. It's a so-called, you know, the necessary cause. It must be there. If that is the cause, it must be there, otherwise you don't see the disease. It's something different. But here you see a lot of non-biological inverted commas. There is always an explanation you can give to any association, okay? But there are things like, you know, if you test the water, you are more likely to get disease. This tells me that the data set is biased. Okay, and so it gives you a measurement of the quality because the interviewer maybe asked, did not make very clear the difference between testing the water before or after the outbreak. So the farmer says, you test the water, you know, before stocking. Yes, yes, yes. He's thinking also about after, when I got a problem, yes, I tested the water, was no problem with water quality, okay? Use of antibiotics, use of vitamins, things like this are affected with an increased risk. Again, bias. So, do you use vitamins? Yes. Do you get disease? Yes. Yes, if I use vitamins when I see that the shrimp dying. That's why, actually, there is an association. Which, again, it tells you about the association, the fact that actually collecting data in a proper epidemiological way and making clear certain things that would reduce those kind of errors. Okay, so, you know, when you are interpreting all these things here, please keep that in mind, that, you know, you say reservoir, then everybody should use a reservoir. Well, if I see this kind of problems here from the database, from the data set, I put a question mark on everything, okay? But there are some things that are actually quite, you know, Seed came out quite a lot in different ways of looking at it. Seed actually came out quite a bit. So to me, there is something associated with Seed. So if it is a pathogen, where is it coming from? Okay, but to me, it is an infectious thing. I have no time machine. Okay, I can't go back to 2010 and wait for the bug to come. I can't do that. Okay, but we look at probabilities. We look at how likely is it to be associated with a practice? How likely is it to be associated with the pesticides or insecticides, sorry, for what we said before? To me, it's more likely to be an infectious agent, okay? It appeared in Vietnam in 2010. It appeared in May, I think, the first report we got from Sok Chang. I'm not sure, you know, you have to check a little bit the dates, but I think in May. There was towards the end, the second half of the season, if you want, okay? So there were some problems in one province, and there was a little bit of an investigation, but then the whole thing disappeared. Of course, everybody harvested the shrimp. There was very little shrimp going out. You know, it's the seasonal patterns of stocking shrimp. And then it reappeared in 2011, in February, January, February, everybody was saying, yes, yes, December, yeah, everybody started having problems. So you look at what other things happened to actually justify such a massive change in this, you know, Peter Walker talked this morning about changes in the environment, the climate change, all these different changes in that balance to justify such a big trigger that actually changes so much. And then we, to our knowledge, there was no major weather event happening in the region where it started, no recorded detectable change in farming practices, no major. Yes, they slowly, some people use it something, and then slowly, somebody uses, but not something that actually changes so much in so many farming systems, across species, and at the same time. So, because of the history of diseases and so on, to me, actually, it sounds like an introduction. And again, I have no time machine, and I can't wait for the bug to come on a boat, you know, but, you know, it's that is a matter of likelihood. Introduction of what? Introduction of broodstock, introduction, maybe use of some feed for broodstock that then was associated, you know, let's imagine this coming for example, because we have, it's not the first time actually this, something like that would have happened, huh? Coming from an introduction of, again, either broodstock, seed, or feed. A certain kind of feed, being maybe live feed, because improving the production of domesticated, all sorts of hypotheses, okay? But that affects the quality of the seed, but more likely that actually introduces something that is toxic bacteria, virus, that I don't know, okay? But you're looking at the probability, looking at the likelihood, actually to me it looks much more like an introduction than something else. And I'm happy to be, you know, for you to disagree and discuss. I mean, that's the reason why we are here. So again, conclusion recommendations. It's likely to be infectious. It can be controlled. We have evidence of that. Seeds appears to be quite an important thing. Is that a pathogen introduction? Question mark? I don't know. There is a need for a properly designed epidemiological investigation. Actually, there is a need. I wanted to put there, you know, the things that we have been discussing for, I don't know, at least 10 years. I've been around for some 15 years at least on these things. And since the time when I came into Asia, everybody has been talking about biosecurity, emergency preparedness, contingency planning, all these kind of things. And we still have new diseases happening and still. So I didn't want to put it there. Yes, we need emergencies. Of course we do. Will it change? I don't know. You need one guy doing something wrong, screws up the whole industry. So really, will we change all the way of thinking of everybody? I don't know. But we need, you know, I'm thinking about the risk factor. I was talking with the chancellor actually over lunch. You know, you have to look at what the people are doing, okay? And you have to do it in a proper way to avoid mistakes. Mistakes like I look only at this population, not at this one here, because this is more convenient, and that biases the sample. So that you come out with the wrong conclusions. So designed properly, with the proper resources as well, coordinated by NACA at the regional level, I don't know, that's for discussion. But involving ERAD, ERAD is a collaborating center on epidemiology, basically, on risk assessments and epidemiology. For the OIE, it's the first time actually the collaborating center is established on epidemiology issues for aquatics by the OIE, and they can serve as a kind of a expertise. You have two people here actually coming from ERAD as a source of technical knowledge to develop this investigation and so on. But these are just ideas that I look forward to talk with you over the next day and a half now that is left. And that's it. These are my email address and website if you want to know about more about IDH. And I welcome a lot of questions after Matthew Briggs' presentation, because that's the structure. Presentation, question and answer. Thank you.